There's a test happening today. No one's going to pass and no one's going to fail, but the whole country is going to be affected. That sounds confusing. It'll all make sense after you watch today's edition of CNN Student News. First up, a pair of European countries look like they're about to get new leaders. Both nations are dealing with massive debt, and those financial struggles seem to be playing a big role in the changes of leadership, as you might expect. Let's start with Italy. Yesterday, we told you about the pressure on Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. We also mentioned a budget vote that was key for his chances to stay in power. Well, the budget passed, but more than half the members of Italy's parliament didn't vote at all. They wanted the budget to pass, but they didn't want to support Berlusconi. Not voting was how they got that message across. So yesterday, Berlusconi's office announced that he is going to step down as prime minister. Over in Greece, Prime Minister George Papandreou has already said he's leaving power, but he and other Greek leaders are trying to figure out who will take over. They were hoping to wrap up those negotiations late yesterday. Next up today, we are looking at Iran and the country's controversial nuclear program. Iran has always said the program is designed for peaceful purposes. Other countries, including the United States, have a different view. They accuse Iran of trying to develop nuclear weapons. There's a new report out from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iranian officials say the report's a complete lie, but it includes serious concerns about the country's nuclear program. Jill Doherty has the details for us.
Iran has mastered the critical steps necessary to design and construct a nuclear weapon, but Iran's leaders have not yet made the decision to build it. That's what diplomats and experts briefed on the new report from the UN's nuclear watchdog agency tell CNN. One key document obtained by IAEA member states, they say, shows planning for a component that could be used to trigger a nuclear weapon.
It's not by any means a smoking gun, but it's another piece of evidence that the IAEA has that points to ongoing efforts to build nuclear weapons by Iran.
David Albright, a former UN weapons inspector, has spoken with experts who wrote the IAEA report. He says, in spite of assertions by the United States that Iran stopped its program in 2003, Tehran actually continued running a complex, sophisticated, and well-hidden program to develop skills needed to make and test a weapon small enough to fit on the warhead of its Shahab missiles.
It looks very apparent now that they want to be able to build a nuclear weapon quickly if they make that decision, and therefore they have to have certain capabilities in place to do that.
The release this week of the IAEA report has fueled speculation that Israel might launch a military strike to take out Iran's nuclear program. But Albright says the new data is not a shock to Israel, which already was aware of it.
So I think this is not in any way a sign for Israel to strike Iran, because they know.
Iran, meanwhile, calls this controversy 100% political. But Tehran also announced this summer that it's moving part of its enrichment process to a facility near the city of Qom, deeply buried under rock, a way of protecting it from any possible military attack. Jill Doherty, CNN, the State Department.
See if you can ID me. I'm a U.S. government agency that was created in 1979. I'm part of the Department of Homeland Security. I help the country prepare for all kinds of disasters, and I coordinate the government's response to them. I'm FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
FEMA uses warning systems to help prepare for disasters. The agency is using one today. This is that no-pass, no-fail test we mentioned at the start of the show. This afternoon, the emergency alert system will send out a message on TVs and radios across the U.S. It's the first time the system has ever been used for a nationwide test. FEMA officials say they want to see how it works and if any upgrades need to be made. While you're on campus, your school might not allow you to buy certain drinks, like sodas and what are called sugar-sweetened beverages. But a new study says school bans don't keep students from drinking them. From the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine, eighth graders were asked in 2007 about the sugary drinks they drank. In some schools, students couldn't buy them on campus. In others, they could. But it didn't matter. 85% of the students surveyed said they'd had a sugary drink during the week of the study, regardless of whether they could get it at school. banning these drinks on campus limited students' access to them, but it didn't have any effect on how many drinks students had overall. Sports drinks, sodas, certain fruit juices are blamed for contributing to childhood obesity, so some government officials are trying to discourage students from having them. This begs an interesting question for our blog. Should schools with bans on sugary drinks start to allow them again? Or do you think a campus ban helps discourage childhood obesity? The address is CNNStudentNews.com. The rule is first names only, no initials, no classes.
Today's shout-out goes out to Coach Tucker's economics classes at Wagoner Sally High School in Wagoner, South Carolina. Which of these technological inventions came first? You know what to do. Was it the escalator, television, burglar alarm, or video game? You've got 3 seconds. Go. Believe it or not, the electronic burglar alarm came first back in 1858. That's your answer, and that's your shout-out.
All right, that was what happened first. But advances in technology are all about what's coming next and who's going to take us there. Soledad O'Brien looks at a new trend popping up all over the United States, classes designed to help people become the next programming pioneers.
So I want to introduce my nonprofit to you. It's called HackTrain. And we train young people to be computer programmers.
Sakai Farai believes learning to create technology is the key to a brighter future. So she walks the streets of Harlem to recruit students for a free 12-week computer programming workshop.
When you give access to people who are marginalized, they do remarkable things with them. And it really shifts their trajectory. It changes their lives in a very real sense. Not just because they make money, not just because they're rich, but because they can reimagine their communities.
But you're just stopping people on the street and asking them if they're interested.
Sure, well, I'm asking them first and foremost if they know what programming is.
Students learn to build what they use. Bruce Lincoln is an educational technologist at Columbia University.
African American and Latino students are the fastest growing market when it comes to the adoption of smartphones. So they're already all over these devices. So, you know, we need to be teaching them how to create apps.
Which is why these types of classes are catching on.
So you've got programs now rising up all over the country that are looking at how to create entrepreneurs, how to get more students involved.
In Atlanta, Glitch pays high school students to test video games as a way to learn computer programming and design.
You can write the app. It's actually very simple to do.
And at Chicago's 21st Century Youth Project.
Right now, we're learning to code Android apps for Android phones. They're also teaching me how to sell things just in general, like not just sell apps, but how to get a client's attention.
We're also learning how to, like, make like little robots and stuff. That's really cool.
In programs that teach technology as a path to opportunity. Reporting for In America, Soledad O'Brien, CNN, New York.
That segment is part of the newest Black in America documentary. It's called The New Promised Land, and it focuses on business and technology. The CNN special airs this coming Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern on CNN. We're putting up a discussion guide that goes along with it. Teachers and parents, you can check that out at our website. Before we go today, it's always good policy to be polite when you're out at a restaurant. Like these folks, waiting patiently for a table, not the guy coming in after them. Rude deer, table for one. The diners at this restaurant just wanted to watch a football game. They had to scramble when the deer blitzed the place. He eventually took off without any injuries to himself or others, and surprisingly, he didn't nab anything out of the cash register. I mean, when a deer breaks into a restaurant, you'd expect him to make off with some dough. Thankfully, nobody was hurt, and now those people can always tell tales of their wildlife experiences. Oh, dear. For CNN Student News, I'm Carl Azuz.